Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host, sitting in the studio tonight with my special guest, co-host, Richard Polinelli. Say hello, Richard.
Hello, everybody. I am not Bobby Jean Bell, although we keep getting confused when we're out and about.
The confusion is there.
Yeah. I'm at least 3 inches taller than she is, but she is better looking.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go with that, and that's okay. As far as I'm going to take it.
Just help people tell us apart, you know.
Richard has kindly acquiesced to allow himself to come into the studio when we are short a co-host. And take the abuse that is normally dished out to Bobby Jean or Russ. And he likes it, so we're going to keep using him.
It's, what can I say? It's kind of fun.
So it is. This show is a lot of fun. I love this show. I love this show. Okay, we are going to be speaking with some young lady that is now in Baltimore. But right now, we're going to talk about... The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, the nice folks at Black Dog. And if you're a new writer, specifically a new writer, and you're kind of wondering how to get things done, editing, proofreading, formatting, all the stuff that writers need, the information they need, give the people at Black Dog a call. The number there is 805-795-3165. And by Out West, and Out West is, of course, your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. If you want to get a hold of those folks, their website, of course, is www.scvoutwest.com, or you can call them toll-free at 877-340-9378. You'll love them both. That's Bobby Jean and Jim Bell. They're just really, really, really nice people. And since we're here, and of course, Target Freight, I just had lunch with them last week, or breakfast actually, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from their dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline their customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today. Call Mike Matruski, actually, at 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it here on The Writer's Block, and they'll have something a little extra for you. And if you're an LTL shipper, we know you're looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. You won't be disappointed. And I just got a thing today that the president of Target, Mike Wagner, is up for some kind of an award in Pittsburgh. This would be a second or third. So congratulations, Mike. Let's hope you make it. And we'll just luck in for another 20 weeks. So there you go. makes things nice. Well, yeah, did you have a good time at the Cowboy Festival?
I did. Got to see a lot of people. A lot of people came by the Buckaroo Bookshop where we were set up. Met a guy who has made a Lone Ranger costume. It looks like it came right off of Clayton Moore's closet. He did a really good job on detailing that. Met a lot of people and met some fellow authors, and it was really fun. Unfortunately, the day I picked was the day the heater got turned on. It was like mid-90s.
Oh, yeah. It can be miserable out there, too, I can tell you.
Yeah, Sunday was a much better day to be there, but it was a lot of fun. And got to have the cowboy cobbler. which oddly enough was, it looked exactly like I had written about when I included it in my book.
Yes.
And I had never seen it before. So it was really good. So
yeah, it is good. Their coffee there is so good, and their cobbler is so good. And you said they didn't have runners this year.
Not that I saw, but, you know, 93-degree heat, I'm not going to complain too much if they're not going to have runners, because that was pretty brutal heat.
Yeah. That, Bobby Jean said that the whole Cowboy Festival went off really well. I unfortunately wasn't able to go this year. It'd be the first time I've ever missed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just glad to see you across the table after you went and tried to blow yourself out there. On that note, though,
yes.
I have a friend in NASA who said that you actually gained more altitude on that
is
than
that right?
The two North Korean missile launches combined. So. But
yeah.
you came up short of astronaut status, so you have to work on that.
I hope that spoiled brat little fat turd is I doubt he is, but that's okay. What's his name? I don't even
know. Who knows?
Who cares?
Yeah, I'm just glad you're still sitting across this table. After
I am. I wasn't for a couple of weeks, but I am now. I've been back for about three, so yeah, we're doing good. We're doing good. Tonight's guest is a young lady that is an author of children's books. She's written... Well, over 30. I something is sticking in my head saying the number is a nice round 32. And they're illustrated children's books, and I'm not going to really go a whole lot into her background. She is the author of over 30, she says, spiritual children's books. Not your typical Harvard grad, and she is a Harvard graduate. She loves making life's deepest concepts clear in a delightfully simple way. So, without any further ado, would you please welcome to the writer's block, Miss Braca Getz. Braca, are you with us?
I am here, yes.
Oh, goody. We get to have you with us. I want to thank you so much for sending that book, I Want to Be Famous.
Yep.
It was a great little story.
Thank you so much. I just had another book published, and that is 33 books.
Oh, 30. Yeah. Okay. So, God, you know, we stand corrected around here all the time, so this is not new. So, anyway, I have a couple questions for you right off the bat. So, okay. First one is, we did not hear or did not read what Seymour's last name is. And
you're
even
right.
Has one. And I was thinking, if it's Butts, I saw him under the grandstands.
Yeah, he could be any last name you want. No, he doesn't really have a...
okay, then.
And with that, we're off.
And your misery is just now starting. the real question I wanted to ask you is, how does one go from Harvard graduate to writing illustrated children's books?
How does one go from there to there? Okay. I could tell you a really interesting story.
Go ahead. It's your show.
Okay, I was always, like, searching for the meaning to life. You know, basically from when I was, like, 12 years old, I started this search. And I searched into all religions, not all religions, but a bunch of religions. And I was, like, searching for what was the meaning to life in all different kinds of ways. And so, like, I didn't really know what it was, but at some point... Somebody actually was involved with Christian Science, got me involved with the idea that a person can accomplish anything that they want, because with God's help, you can do anything. So with that concept in mind, I started doing really well in school, and I said, you know, well, there's like infinite intelligence, so like I could do anything. And so I just started really applying myself and doing well, and I started getting really good grades, and then, like, I remember the college guidance counselor in high school said, well, you really should go to, like, Harvard or Princeton or Yale or something, and my parents were like, what? Like, we don't do those kind of things, you know? But, like, she really encouraged me, so I applied to all these places, and I got into all of them. I was really surprised, but, like, that's just how it went. So when I went to Harvard, I was at this part. I got invited to this garden party for like exclusive, like preppy kind of people, which I wasn't, like, you know, that went to prep schools, and I wasn't that type at all. So, but at this party, it was like, you know, there were people like Caroline Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. These were the people that were there when I was there, you know, so, and other, like, you know, like the children of other famous people at that time. And so I went to this party, and it was like this gorgeous place where, and like, all the tea sandwiches were all like perfectly, and all the lawn is manicured beautifully. It was like this incredible scene, and I said, wow, this is where, like, this is like it, this is like when you've made it, this is like the highest peak to be at, like, I can't believe I'm here, what am I doing here? And then all of a sudden the clouds filled up the sky, and it started pouring, like a thunderstorm came down on this whole beautiful party. And I stood there and I go, oh my goodness, this is not the peak. There's something higher than this. Like this is proof to me. Like, these people, although they seem powerful, there's something higher than this that's more powerful. Like that God could do anything. Again, you know, I was seeing this proof. And so it was like, there I was at Harvard, and this is where I was striving to be. But once you get up there, what's really up there? It's still the same thing, that the most basic things in life are what's really important. So it was a turning point in my life, really, of recognizing this, that, like, superficial things are just superficial things, but the lasting things in life, that's what we really have to work on. So I that's really what I have devoted my life to, is trying to help children understand the spiritual truths in life. So I try to put them down on a child's level. And even though, like, you know, I really enjoyed myself at Harvard, and then I was in medical school afterwards too. The things that I'm really drawn to is what's the simplest way to get your message across, and one of my goals in life is to remind children that they are souls. That's what they are. Most importantly, is that they're souls. They're spiritual beings. Like you've heard the expression, we're spiritual beings in, like, human bodies, you know, but the essence of who we are is our soul, and that's what my books are really all about, expressing. Yeah.
Okay, buy that.
You're still with me, right?
Oh yeah, we're just looking at each other, going, Harvard, medical school, children's books.
Well, it sounds like the 12-year-old is in you is the one who is really doing the driving force behind writing these books, because you started at that age, and you're trying to get other children at that age to kind of explore these concepts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know if you could tell from my voice, but I seem still kind of like a really young person, which I'm not. But I think it's because I have that sense of wonder about life that hasn't gone away, you know. And that's what I want to share, and I hope it never goes away. You know, I think that's the way to always approach life, you know, what? With wonder and joy, and always learning about more things. That's it.
Well,
and really, yeah, I was going to say that really from when I was 12 and I started searching, like, it was the years of, like, the hippie kind of years, you know, and really it was actually a painful time. The search wasn't so joyful. It was kind of painful, because when you're missing that missing piece in your soul, and you know, you want to know what the purpose of life is, it's like a hunger inside, and you're never satisfied until you can fulfill that, you know. So that and until that searching, it was like a relentless kind of searching. Once that searching ended, then I was able to be able to share that joy with other people too. You mm-hmm. know, so mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, I have a sense of wonder as well. In fact, I wonder all the time why I'm still alive.
And you know what they say about that, like what's the exact wording? I put it on my fridge. Right. Here is a test to find out whether your mission on Earth is finished. If you're alive, it isn't. So that's why you're here. Because your mission on Earth is not yet finished.
Okay. I've just, my life has been fraught with all kinds of things. But like the bookie, you actually got to write back and forth with Jerry. She's my better half. And believe me when I say she's my better half.
She tells me. I read about you that you were awarded a Purple Heart.
I was, two of them.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Amazing.
Well, I actually got shot three times, but the one they wouldn't give me because it was in the butt and I was running away the other way, so I was going the other way.
I don't see anything in the wording where it's what direction you're going. You know, you're shot.
My medic never turned it in. He gave me the bullet though. I don't even know where that is. A lot of water under that bridge. Let me tell you. Anyway, back to Braca. Okay, so now I have a question for you, and I hope this is not an offensive question for you. We try not to be offensive on this show, and we've actually quite succeeded.
Yeah.
How did one go from being a Vicky Druss to a Braca Getz?
Oh, fantastic question. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, I was born Jewish, and I had a little bit of background about Judaism, but I didn't understand that it was a very spiritual way to live. That's the part I didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really exposed to that, and I didn't have a background education in Judaism. But when I went to Israel before supposedly the break between my first and second year of medical school, I went for 6 weeks to volunteer at Hadassah Hospital on the oncology ward. And while I was there, I met a friend who I'd known back in my elementary school days who had become a religious Jew. And I told him about my search, my mission to find the meaning to life, you know. And he said, well, if you know, I'll take you to some schools here where you could learn about that. So he took me to schools where it's like yeshivas for beginners. So I started learning about Judaism and really studying it from the most basic sources. And right away, I felt like, oh my goodness, this is what my soul was craving. So it was like, finally I found, you know, I was searching in many religions beside my own, and I found pieces of truth in all of them. But when I got there and I learned about Judaism, which is what my soul was, a Jewish soul, it completely was the puzzle piece that fit exactly. And they asked me what my Hebrew name was, and I was never given a Hebrew name as a child.
Okay.
And I was given the name Braca. Then they said the name Braca because Braca means blessing, and it starts with the letter Beis in Hebrew, which is like the letter Vase for Vicky. So, like, that's how it got to be from Vicky to Braca. And then, well, when I got married, then my name changed from Vicky Druss to Braca Getz. So, and my husband also was a person that became religious in his 20s also. So we both were on a similar path. And what's really interesting is that we were born like three blocks away from each other in New York and Queens, but we both met for the first time in Jerusalem in Israel. So
now, see, I never would have guessed in a gazillion years that you were from the Brooklyn, Queens area.
You're joking me, right?
Of course I am.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Richard can see the twinkle in my eyeball.
I'm shaking my head because you can hear Brooklyn in your voice still, all right?
Right. Both my parents were from Brooklyn, so that's where I get this great Brooklyn accent.
Yeah, actually, I used to have a guy that worked for me that was from Brooklyn as well, and he also was Jewish, and he used to, but then he always just come up with this really discombobulated Italian that he just made it all up as he went.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you have written, okay, we're on to 33 now.
Yes.
Somehow I got the feeling that you're really proud of I Want to Be Famous.
Yeah, well, so 31 of my books were Jewish books that I wrote.
Uh-huh.
And now I started branching out for the general public.
Okay.
So I Want to Be Famous was the first book for the general public, and now Where Is God is the second book.
Okay.
So these are my first books that are for everybody.
Would you like to give our listeners a little idea of what I Want to Be Famous is about? Because it actually is a charming little story.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a very unusual story. I know that.
well, yeah.
do you want me to read it?
No, no. You can read some of it if you'd like.
Okay. Alrighty, I'll start it off. Okay, great. And it's dedicated to children's souls shining brightly. I want to be famous, said Seymour one day. Those words grew and grew. They would not go away. It felt like an itch trapped inside his head. It itched him all day and when he went to bed. Those words started tickling him. They kept him up late. I wish I were famous, he said. I can't wait. And then one day, right out of the blue, doing nothing special, his wish did come true. A woman making a video walked slowly by. She caught Seymour singing. Then he burped. Oh, my. Soon it was the funniest video yet. It was posted all over the internet. And Seymour's burp was the best part. Yet, you guessed it, that was just the start. By the next day, he was on TV. Then he became the star of a movie. People wrote books about him. Tons of fan mail was sent. And crowds stood and cheered him wherever he went. The president said, Seymour shall get a parade. And in Seymour's name, a special day shall be made. Seymour Day was great. Fireworks blasted. The only problem was, none of it lasted. After a short while, his fame started to go. Brand new kids with burps began stealing the show. He was famous no more. Fans were gone, everyone. Feeling sad, Seymour cried, "Wait, this can't be done." But suddenly nobody noticed what he said. They were tired of his burp, so he sulked in his bed. Seymour stayed in his bed. He did not want to play. Under 6 blankets and quilts, Seymour lay. Should I stop there or should I keep going?
You're almost done.
Okay. But from that dark place, something started to shine. Where's this light coming from? Wow, inside me, it's mine. He kicked off one blanket and inched up in bed. He kicked off another. Getting closer, he said. The rest came off in one swoop. He was hot. Now Seymour felt ready. But ready for what? ready to get up and try something new, something he never, ever dared to do. He put on a smile, then had a good laugh. He felt really happy without one autograph. Without all that fame, I'm still one great guy. It's hard to believe that, but I'll give it a try. It no longer mattered if everyone knew his name. He was breaking his habit of itching for fame. Then just at that moment, without Seymour hearing, there was a sound much louder than millions cheering. A clap of thunder burst forth from on high, louder than all applause. Can you guess why? He started breaking his habit of just looking to others, like tons of screaming fans or his two older brothers. Seymour's bright spotlight from inside him shone out. If you see him today, you might hear him shout, "I don't want to be famous. No, I've had enough. Now I see there is more than all that superstar stuff. Bang, boom, pop, pop. Countless fireworks blast. And the best part of all is these fireworks last. Seymour's inner light sparkles. Hip, hip, hooray. Now and forevermore, it could be Seymour's day."
Oh, that's it. Now, see, I can see why you're probably... Wait a minute. I'm going to give you the clap.
There you go. Our studio audience was so struck by that, they couldn't react for a second. I had to go out there and shake them.
You can't get any better than that, Bracco.
I have a quick question for you, and you had mentioned earlier that most of your books were kind of geared toward Jewish children. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Do you see sometimes maybe that children who were non-Jewish could also read those books and maybe gain a little bit more understanding of their Jewish friends? Was that something?
Yeah, that is so true. That's really true. And those Jewish books are now going to become books for the general public because they were accepted to be now published, without specific Jewish sayings in them or whatever. They're like one book, it's called Hashem's Candy Store. It's going to be God's Candy Store. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to ship certain terms and they're going to be for the general public.
Sure.
Yeah. So like, Where Is God is for, it's for anybody. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to get in a little bit of your process because there's several questions that I have about when you're writing a children's book. First of all, historically, children's books are short, and
right.
I know why I think they're short. What is your take on why they're a shorter story than? I would rather go in my kid's bedroom and read them. I Want to Be Famous, because it only takes 3 minutes.
Right.
Than to sit there and try to read Tom Sawyer.
Right.
I think the children's, their attention span is so short.
Exactly.
That if you give them a long story, they're not going to pay attention to it.
That's right.
So I don't know what your take is.
My essence is that I just like to get right to the point. Well, that's me.
Okay, then. Well, now we have. Okay, so I'm doing philosophical. You're doing, I just want to get it over with.
not so much get it over with, but I want to just get the message across. You know,
yeah.
I'm very much that way. And, like, why beat around the bush? You know,
well, that's true.
I just want to, like, yeah.
That's true.
I don't have patience to read long things. Even when I was at Harvard, I would they'd give us assignments. I'd read like the first paragraph and the last paragraph of the whole book, and then I'd get what it was all about. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like wasting time reading lots of things. I just want to know what's the main point of this?
You mean to tell me that for the last 2 years I've been doing this wrong? I mean, I virtually have to read a book a week now for the show. And I do. I honestly read the books. But now I'm thinking I'm going to do the first paragraph, last paragraph.
Hopefully you enjoy the book.
Well, yes. I sometimes I do. I mean, you know, every writer is good in their own right. And we have discovered that on this show, if nothing else. You know, all the pretension is gone when you read the dichotomy of books that we have to read. Is this? Yes. I mean, like Richard writes science fiction, and I write westerns, and we have people in here that write spy novels, and you have children's books, and so I mean, you know, you get such a big cross section of not only authors but publishers and books and everything else in here. So, have you ever had writer's block?
That's a great question. Have I ever had it? No, because, I'm not really too serious about what I'm doing. That's the thing. I think, the seriousness is what gives people writer's block. You know, they feel pressure and stuff like that. So I don't write with deadlines or anything like that. I just write when I feel like it. And I always tell other people to do that, too. Just go and play. Only play. Don't take it seriously, because then that kind of inhibits you, you know. Right. So I just have fun with it. And mainly I write when, like I have nothing else to do. Like, let's say I'm, on a trip in a car, and I'm the passenger, I'm not driving, and, I have a few hours in a car ride. That's when I take along an idea that I have, and I start writing, because, what else am I going to do right now, you know? And I have fun in the car just writing it out. Or on plane trips, I write. I love to do when there's, you know, nothing else I'm doing. Like, it's like I'm playing a game. Like, someone else might do a crossword puzzle then, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I write these books. That's what I do. And also, sometimes sitting out in nature, I love to write then. I like to do it, when I'm in a flowing state. And it's like, why not, you know? So then I don't worry if I make mistakes or it doesn't go right. It doesn't matter. I'm just, you know, I'm just doing this. So it's like,
sure,
it's playful.
Sure.
Yeah,
I get that.
Playful for me.
Do you use a specific publisher?
I've had a bunch of different publishers. And now Cactus Moon is publishing my books for the general public. And with the Jewish publishers, there's been a bunch of publishers, Judaica Press, Hachai Publications, Feldheim. There's several different publishers of the Jewish. And then now I'm going with, right now, Cactus Moon is publishing my general public book.
Cactus Moon, we've heard of that before.
they're a branch of another one, too. Desert Moon, maybe, or something like that.
Someone else had something done through Cactus Moon.
Oh, I think so, and I think that's how I got connected to you. Actually,
could be.
I heard about it through somebody else that was on your show.
Could be. Well, right. You know, because we have people from all ilks on this show.
I have a question. When you're doing the children's books and you have the illustrations, how does the illustrations work? Do you work with the illustrator? Or do they come up with something, send it to you, and you take a look at it? How does that process work?
Great question. You know, years ago when I started doing this, they would just send me a finished product. I never got to see the illustrations at all. Now everything is completely different because of the internet, you know. Mm-hmm. So now it's so easy that the illustrators send me the illustrations as it's going along, and I can give them feedback, and they'll change things because of the feedback that I give them, which is fantastic. So I feel like the books are so much more in line with the way I love them to be than originally when my books first started getting published.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because now
there's
so much back and forth between us, which I love. Also, sometimes now I get to choose the illustrators. It's really, it's a wonderful experience. Yeah. I love
it. I, you know, a good illustrator can virtually make your book pop.
That's right.
And,
exactly.
You know, and a bad illustrator or illustrator that really isn't paying attention to what he's illustrating, your book can get lost.
Exactly. And also the colors are so important.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, for them to be really vivid, and the cover of the book is extremely important also for it to pop off the shelves. You know, it's right. Like it should really grab you.
Right.
It's a really important thing. And children love color, too.
Yes, and the more color, the more they like it.
Exactly. And I love whimsical. I love whimsical illustrations. You could tell when the illustrator is having a blast illustrating the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, they're really in the flow, too. So it's just so great when that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, we have friends that are visiting us quite often here in the studio. Eric Heisner, who is a screenwriter and an actor and an author, and then his best friend, his name is Al Bringus, and he is an illustrator. And Al illustrates all of Eric's books, and he does such a phenomenal job. But he does it all pen and ink.
There's
no color.
Too.
Yeah, and it's really well done, and it's just like in one chapter there'll be a basic picture, and then the next chapter there's a little bit more added, and as it goes through the book, that's what you get. Pretty soon you got boots, guns, saddles, horses, you know. And by the time the book is done, then you get dead bodies laying around it.
Wow!
Went from such a serene picture,
I know,
to death and mayhem for everyone.
No, I have to give Eric a hard time. My last book, actually, Eric wrote the foreword for it, so I really can't. I love Eric. He's a good guy.
I got to see some of his stuff at the Cowboy Festival. He does really good stuff.
So. I'll bring it, sis. He does.
Yeah.
He does. And you use different illustrators, is that correct?
Yes. I love how what you're talking about, you know, with the Westerns and the science fiction, and that's just so interesting how... To me, that God made so many different kinds of people, you know, that love to do such different types of things in this world. And that's it. There's a reason why each of us is here. It's amazing.
No, that's, I'm here just to do a radio show. Because I was born, I was born a heathen, godless Catholic. No, I'm only kidding. Hey, look, we got Henry's going to be calling in here in a few minutes. So, in the time we got, a couple of minutes we have left, why don't you give us your contact information, if you would?
Oh, the best thing to find my books is to go to the Brucker Getz Amazon author page, because all my books are on my page.
Yes, they are.
So it's to spell my name, I'll just spell it Bracha, and then my last name, Getz, has an O in it, Goetz. So if you Google Brucker Getz and the author Amazon page, you'll see all my books in one spot.
Right, right. Yeah. And your email address?
Begetzer@gmail.com.
I love that, Getzer.
Yeah, Goetz, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, ER@gmail.com. And I also love doing presentations. I've really done them internationally, and I go to schools, libraries, and wherever, synagogues and different, you know, wherever they like me to do these presentations. I love it.
Well, now that you're opening up a whole different world, because now you're going into the general public as well. So,
exactly.
I mean, look
exactly.
at the audiences you're going to be picking up, and the children that are all over that are not Jewish, that are now get to have a good time with your books.
I'm so happy about that, yes.
Yes, it's wonderful. Richard,
I was just going to say, you have a Facebook page too, don't you?
Yes, Facebook page
okay,
too.
So
yeah,
just
yes,
different
in
ways
fact,
people.
In fact, yeah. I liked it for you today.
You did.
I
okay.
Did.
Well, thank you.
Not
that's
yours.
Right.
Hers.
Oh, hers. You like mine? You don't. All right. Let's see how you play.
I know yours too. You know, you bring him in here, put him in a chair, and look at how he acts.
I know. I start getting grabby. I'm sorry.
Okay, Bracha, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and joining us here in our little tiny radio show.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me to come. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's, you know, it's, we love all of our authors. And please, if you ever want to inject anything, or you want to let us know about a new book or something, Thursday nights, you know what time, because you're sitting there probably in your pajamas watching late news. Feel free to give us a call. The number here is 818-602-4929. And you can call us and let us know, and we'll always take your call.
Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you for taking time to be with us this evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Braca Getz. She's fun.
Yep, she may be in Baltimore, but she has not left Brooklyn behind.
She is still in Brooklyn.
Yep.
That is a fact.
Yep, yep.
So now we're just, Henry's going to be calling in. Actually, he'd probably be right now. Henry's going to be calling in with what he's got going on the Western Roundup and his take on the, there he is, on his take on the Cowboy Festival. So let's see what he's got to say. Henry.
Yes, it's me, Jim. How you doing?
I am here. I am actually very few scars left.
You sound great.
Well, thank you. Well, my voice was never affected. It's just, you know, just the rest of me.
Well, this is true, but now you can go back to television.
I know. Thank you. I can do that. You got a job for me?
No. I'm working on it.
Okay. So, give me the lowdown on the Cowboy Festival, Henry.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm skipping ahead in my notes. Of course, William S. Hart Ranch, Santa Clarita Cowboy
right.
Festival, especially the Buckaroo Bookshop,
was a
roaring success.
As always.
Lots of great music, lots of great writer talk on the Out West stage.
Good.
Great music throughout the place. And so much good shopping, good food, good history. Now, I got a particular kick out of where there is screening silent Western movies the next building over. I got to watch a William S. Hart movie on his ranch, some of it that was filmed on that ranch, and in a building that both Tom Mix and John Ford had filmed in.
Oh, wow. Is that not just the coolest?
That would work.
Just, yeah. You can't beat that with a stick.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah. And beautiful prints from Tom Barnes of retro format. And that great live piano accompaniment by Cliff Retallick. I was talking to him about it, and I didn't realize that he really creates a score as he goes along for every movie he does. He doesn't, like, write them down and say, oh, I'm showing Keaton the General again and do
mm-hmm.
it. It's
mm-hmm.
it new stuff every time, which is just impresses the heck out of me.
So it's all new music every movie.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of work.
That's more work than I would do, yes.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to listen.
This works, we're running with it.
That might be taken the wrong way. But, I did want to touch on a few things that are coming up very soon.
Okay.
For instance, just next couple of days. Well, if you're in Oklahoma, I'm not, but perhaps you are.
No.
But Friday through Sunday... at the Gene Autry Oklahoma Museum, which is in Gene Autry, Oklahoma. Did you know there is a Gene Autry, Oklahoma?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. But there is, and they have a museum there, and they're doing a 3-day program called The Cowboy Way, a convening of everything cowboy. And among the people that are going to be performing musically are Rex Allen Jr. and my all-time favorites, the Sons of the Pioneers.
Oh, I love them.
Oh, me too. And in Hollywood, Saturday night at the Egyptian Theater, again, Tom Barnes' retro format program, they'll present a program featuring the work of a well-respected but rarely seen silent screen comedian, Alice Howell, and special guest is going to be Anthony Slide, who is a great film historian and has probably interviewed more silent screen stars than anyone else still living. And he's actually got a new book about Alice Howell and her films.
Huh.
Now, of course, John Wayne was born this month, May 26, 1907.
Correct.
And to celebrate his birthday, our friends at the INSP Network are going to be showing John Wayne movies every Sunday in May, including The War Wagon, She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, The Shootist, El Dorado, and a whole bunch more.
Yeah, Fort Apache, yeah. I just saw that today, I think.
Which is your favorite?
I have all those on DVD, so I watch them whenever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watch them on TV, and then I pull out my disc and see the special features.
Exactly.
I actually like McClintock the best,
really?
Oddly enough, yeah.
You know,
it's an interesting choice, but a very good one.
Yeah,
very funny picture.
My best friend is we used to sit and watch whenever the Cavalry trilogy came on. My oldest son Brian too used to sit there with us, and we'd sit there and we'd have to get into the Crown Royal because you can't watch John Wayne without a Crown Royal.
No,
so you know we'd sit there and drink Crown Royal and watch the Cavalry trilogy, and we'd be in tears. And I mean. But, you know, John Wayne was John Wayne.
Yeah. No, I used to watch them all when I was a kid. And the first John Wayne movie I watched where he dies is The Cowboys. And I actually got up in arms because, John Wayne doesn't die. This movie must be reshot.
That's what made Bruce Dern the most hated actor in the world.
Yes.
He killed John Wayne.
And also the most popular, depending on who you're out there with.
Exactly. So what else you got going? What's in your roundup?
Well, let's see. I don't know if you're a fan of dramatic Western radio, but I just found out that John Gregory, who does the Powder Burns radio series, did a wonderful season with the last work, I think, of Robert Vaughn acting in it. They're starting a new season on May 26th. Going to be talking about that. And talking about the highlights of the TCM Classic Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be reviewing another fine spaghetti western double bill from Wild East Video. One of them, Massacre at Canyon Grande, I keep thinking it's Grand Canyon, from 64, stars Robert Mitchum's lookalike son Jim in a role very much like his dad would have played. Do you remember the Western series that gave Robert Mitchum his start?
Wait a minute. I want to say Hopalong Cassidy.
You should say that, because he did seven of them.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, he always, when asked what his favorite movie of his career was, he would always say, Hoppy Serves a Writ.
Really?
I never thought he was serious.
He always played a bad guy, didn't he?
Well, in his regular standalone features, yeah. In the Hopalong Cassidy's, he was generally a sidekick.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, have you been watching Underground in the Sun?
I have not.
I haven't either. I've got them all TiVo'd. And, you know, we're halfway through season one of The Sun, and next Wednesday's the final episode of season two of Underground. And it drives me nuts. They go by so fast. So I've TiVo'd everything so I can catch up. But it's so strange now that so many series, including both of these, have just 10 episodes per season.
I know. It's the same thing with Longmire.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, so frustrating. You just sort of get warmed up and boom, it's over.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
The
writer's guild strike that was just averted this week. One of the big, big issues is the fact that series have so few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when their salaries rise, writers are making less money because, well, a season used to mean as many as 40 episodes. Now it's as few as 7 or 8.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard for writers to make a living with so little work.
Right. Well, especially on the Netflix and Amazons, they're just, I mean, you know, short seasons and you got to wait a year.
Yeah.
You know? That's right. Yeah. Build you up and then nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately for us, we get to have Craig Johnson back on here on August 24th.
That is so exciting.
I know.
We had such a good time with him the last time.
Yes, we did.
What a terrific writer. Anyway, you know, you can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Excellent. And you made it all the way through. No flubs.
Yeah, without stumbling once.
You're the man. We'll see you soon, Henry. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you in a couple
Thanks
weeks.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I got to meet him for all of 3 seconds.
I know.
He was just bouncing
like
to
he flips.
Person.
He's like, he's so fast. He just goes from table to table and says hi and how you doing and picks up something and looks at it and gone.
Off he gone. Yeah, not what he was doing. He was hopping around pretty good.
I just love Henry, though. He's just I met Henry for the first time like 4 or 5 years ago. And I think it's when my book Stryker came out. No, maybe Dark Angel or I don't know, one of them. There's so many, I can't remember them all.
He brought up spaghetti westerns. I'll have to ask him what he thinks of For a Few Dollars More with Lee Van Cleef and Clint Eastwood in it.
That wasn't very good.
Really? You didn't like that one?
No.
See, that's the only Clint Eastwood western I like.
I watched Fistful of Dollars. All the way through for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You know. I've actually never even been a huge fan of Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
It was okay, but like I said, of those three, For a Few Dollars More was my favorite because it was just the two of them, and you could kind of almost see a father-son thing going there for a little bit between them.
Yeah.
especially when they start off as adversaries. So it was. I thought it was a good film.
Yeah, they were better than most of the spaghetti westerns that were being made. I mean, Stuart Granger did one where he was. I mean, yeah. Oh man.
Well, who was there was one Henry Fonda and this one guy who can't act, but for some reason was always in these weird westerns. They Call Me Nobody or something
that. Yeah.
I watched that, and I'm like, Fonda must have needed money.
Well, he did Once Upon a Time in the West, which is a pretty good movie.
Which was good, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're coming to an end of another Thursday night. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. I'd love to come down.
Hey, you know what? You're always welcome. And, you know, anytime you want to jump in the car and ride out with me, feel free. And next week we are having Ona Russell. She's written a couple books, two or three. She writes about the 1920s, which is kind of cool because she thinks that there's definitely a parallel line drawn between the 1920s and 2017. So it'd be fun to ask her about that.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then actually the bookie and I are going down to have lunch with her in Solana Beach Tuesday.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good little road trip.
And I'm assuming Bobby Bell will be here. So
Bobby will be here next Thursday, and I just sent her Ona's book, and she's going to, you know, that's quite a thick piece tome,
yeah,
as it were. So, again, we've just killed another Thursday evening. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back again next Thursday at the same bat time, same bat channel. So until then, y'all have a good week, and we will be talking to you next Thursday right here on LA Talk Radio.